Hey everyone, welcome back to the Unexpected Adventures in North Alabama podcast. I'm your host, Malia Hames, and joining me today is Barbara Kelly from Delano Park in Decatur. Thank you so much for being here today, Barbara.
Thank you, Malia. I really love talking about Delano Park. It's just been part of my life for so long.
Yeah, and I'm so excited to talk with you about it because as people will find out, this is one of my happy places to go all the time. So I can't wait to talk about it.
It definitely is a happy place.
Yes. Well, let's just jump on in. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your role with Delano Park.
Well, I was just thinking about that and how long I've been involved with Delano Park. And just unusually, my whole life, I've been going to Delano Park since I was first grade was the first time I went to Delano Park as a student at West Decatur Elementary School. Yeah. We would have our picnics there. It was the main city park at that time. It was our Point Mallard. Mm-hmm. And that year, my first grade year, my principal, she wrote on my report card, you know, you could be an artist. And that really changed my life. I mean, you know how a teacher can change your life by just, yes, by just saying something. And so all through my life, I just had this pursuit of artistic things and beauty. It's always mm-hmm. been really important to me. So when I went to college, I majored in art history. Always loved history too. And then when I moved back to Decatur, mm-hmm. it was amazing. I've always lived near Delano Park. For 54 of those years, I've lived almost across the street.
Yeah.
I literally can see the Rose Garden from my house. But not until the year 2000 mm-hmm. did I get involved with Delano Park. I never thought of it more as just a place that I love to go walk. Mm-hmm. So in 2000, a group got together and they were going to redo the park. And the park, I had never even noticed. I'd never really looked at it, but it was in really bad shape. There was nothing in the Rose Garden. It was just bare grass. And, you know, it needed some love and care. It just been loved to death for so many years. So this group got together and they called themselves the Friends of Delano Park. And that's mm-hmm. how I got involved with that from the very beginning. I started writing grants to get money and learning. I knew nothing. I knew nothing about the history of the park. I knew it was old, but I had no idea that it was like 137 years old, but wow. had no idea about the history. So that was just a great adventure for me. And it's just been quite a trip. You know, I learn every day and it's changed my life.
Yeah. Well, I am so thankful for the Friends of Delano Park because it is just such an oasis, such a sanctuary for me. And I really appreciate that.
It is definitely my sanctuary.
Yeah.
It's really provided so much peace for me. And so
yes,
I'm thankful to talk about it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, you mentioned a little bit about the history of the park, that it was 137 years old. So tell us a little bit more about the history and some of the visionaries involved in the creation of this park.
It is very interesting to me. You got to remember that Decatur was this tiny little village. After the Civil War, it was just devastated. There were only four buildings standing.
Wow.
Then there was just kind of an economic depression. And then in 1878, there was a yellow fever epidemic, and the population had been reduced to like 400 people.
Oh,
it
wow.
was really small. But it had this great location right on the river and at the crossing of two great railroad lines. And so it was just a perfect spot. So these visionary guys got together, E.C. Gordon, C.C. Harris, and W.W. Littlejohn. They had all served in the Civil War together. They all knew each other. Mm-hmm. And they had this idea of creating the Chicago of the South. And so they started quietly, like about 1886, buying up land in and around what was then the little town of Decatur, a little village of Decatur, really. Mm-hmm. And so they bought up all these this huge acreage, which was going to be New Decatur. But they really were dreaming big, and they wanted a designer who was going to just make this just the Chicago of the South. Mm-hmm. So they went to New York and hired Nathan Franklin Barrett, who was very important in landscape architecture. He was one of the original founders of the American Society of Landscape Architects, and he was the third president of that organization. So he came down and he laid out the city of New Decatur. They wanted to be with Decatur, but Decatur didn't want this new place because it would just raise everybody's taxes. So it became New Decatur, a separate town. In the very center of the town was this huge sprawling park. So it was called City Park, and everybody, in 1 year, 41 new industries came to Decatur and 500 new houses were built in 1 year of 1887. But then in 1888, there was the yellow fever epidemic and everybody left town.
Oh, wow.
So not much happened. We had the park and we had all the houses began to be built, but there were depressions and there were a lot of things holding it back. And we can't find a lot that happened in the park from that time until about the 1930s. But in 1930, we had a severe depression and no one had a job. I mean, it was like we lost the L&N shops. They were they had hired 2,000 people and they left Decatur.
Oh, wow.
So we have no people with no jobs, and cotton was 5 cents a pound, and that was nothing. So there was nothing to support us, and it was that time that Franklin Delano Roosevelt came through. He must have had some kind of relationship with Barrett Shelton, who ran the Decatur Daily, because we got so many improvements at that time because of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. There was a group, the very first group, they were only in existence from 1933 to 1934, just that winter. It's called the Civilian Works Administration. And Decatur was chosen as one of the places that received all that money. So about 2,000 men, well, I'm sorry, 140 men worked in Delano Park, which was not called Delano at that time. It was still City Park. But they worked to bring beauty to Decatur. And they also worked on the Old State Bank at the same time. But they found another visionary, which was Carolyn Courtner Smith, who was one of Alabama's first, a pioneer lady architect. She was very unusual. She built lots of houses all over Alabama and all over the Southeast, houses and churches. And she's not really known that well, but she was very, very talented. And she built all the stone structures in the park. And the Civilian Works Administration was there for that. And later it was the WPA, the Works Progress Administration, in the late 1930s. So this was sort of the only park here, all these beautiful stone buildings. And the Decatur Daily put out a little challenge to name the park, and they got all these different names, but they chose the name Delano because they wanted to honor Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So they named the park Delano. I think she won a $5 prize for naming the park. The plan was at that time, there were no trees at that time, and they planted 2,000 roses and all these beautiful plants. I mean, it was just a big, big undertaking. Those visionaries, that Barrett Shelton and Carolyn Courtner Smith, Nathan Franklin Barrett, all these people who had this vision of a big plan. I mean, they always wanted the best. And at that point, it was truly amazing for the South when they were in this huge depression.
I remember seeing the sign that talks about Carolyn Courtner Smith, and I remember reading it thinking, oh, wow. I thought, of course a woman designed this beautiful rose garden because it's just, it's so beautiful and the way the roses are all laid out. So I thought, of course she did.
And she applied to all the, to Yale and to all these big universities, even Auburn, and she was rejected because she was a woman. It was like when she applied, it was like 1913, and she was rejected because she was a woman, but she didn't let that stop her. And she worked for the Mars family up at Milky Way's farm and laid out all their structures up there. And she owned three lumber companies in Decatur.
Oh, wow.
So she was quite a lady. She was quite something. And we're just now starting to realize the good work she did.
Yeah.
Those structures over there, it's all under the National Register. You know, there's a historical overlay. So we can't do anything in the park unless it's approved by the Historic Preservation Commission, which really protects the park. And one of the main reasons Friends of Donner Park started was protecting and preserving the park. Because you just don't have 30 acres in the middle of a city that's a green space. You know, that is just real luxury. Not many towns have that. So we're just thankful for that and that it has been protected over these past 24 years, that it's been under the overlay really longer than that.
Yeah.
But that does give a layer of protection that it won't just become like a filling station or a big business or something. That we want it always to be open to everyone.
Yes, we need that. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the signature rose garden there. So tell us about the different types of roses and other plants, because there's more than just roses in the rose garden.
It's very interesting because right now we've lost a lot of the big trees, but originally it was full sun. But when we came along in 2000, it was almost total shade. Well, it's hard to grow roses in total shade.
Mm-hmm.
Someone said, oh, no, you can grow these knockout roses. So we also had hydrangeas because we have a lot of shade, and that people love hydrangeas. But the knockout roses, we had 450 knockout roses. And then in 2010, we got the rose rosette virus, and it killed all the roses.
Oh,
every
wow.
one of them got the disease. And if you've had knockout roses, you have to watch closely for this thing. It's carried by mite. And if one plant gets it, you have to take it out immediately. Every year we have one or two now that get it, but not 450.
Yeah.
So we lost the 450 roses and we were so sad, but we've gone back and planted old garden roses and things that are called earth kind, and they require very little maintenance. And we just deadhead the roses every week and we keep them fertilized and watered and they're very easy. Well, they're not as easy as the children's area where everything's native, because these are exotic plants and they're not quite that easy, but they're really beautiful. And they are, each one has a lot of history to it. Some of them date back to like 1815. They've been in production since then. So we just tried to find things that were like bulletproof that you could put in and it would be, and everyone would enjoy, and they're blooming all the time. So it's very exciting.
They smell so wonderful when the roses
have a fragrance, and the knockouts didn't. And the fragrance is just so wonderful.
Yeah.
I love the roses.
Yeah. Well, we typically ask our Facebook question that I ask each week. We typically ask this at the end of the episode, but since we're talking about the roses, our winning question was, when do the roses typically begin blooming each year? So this feels like a good time to ask that question.
It's a little different every year, but usually it's about the middle of April. And like right now, they're all just coming out. And we always prune them on Valentine's Day. That really works. This year it was a week later because of a freeze, that we had a really bad freeze. So we waited a week later, but we pruned the roses around Valentine's Day. And then we fertilize them. And then by about middle of April, they start blooming. And then by May 1st, it's really gorgeous. And by Mother's Day, it's all in full bloom. And but they continue blooming just in cycles, like maybe four or five different blooms a year. They there's always something blooming.
Yeah.
But if you keep them deadheaded, and that's what we do every week, we just deadhead, you know, take off the dead blooms. And so, they're relatively easy, although they do take, you have to make sure they're watered and make sure they're fertilized and make sure they're deadheaded. It's just a huge plus for the garden to have the roses. It's a historic thing, and we just want to keep it as long as we can.
I love that garden. And then the large gazebo with the benches. I've taken my lunch break there. I mean, it's just so peaceful to sit out there and smell the fragrance. And
the pergola was not original there, but because we had the deep shade, that area was originally arches of roses. If you look at it, there's an arch of bluestone and then another arch of the limestone, and that was to repeat the rose beds, because we couldn't have roses in the shade like that. Now we have more sun because we've lost the trees that were put in. In the 1930s, people went to the Bankhead Forest and they got little saplings and planted them around the rose garden. Mm-hmm. But it was mostly water oaks and they only live about 50 to 80 years. It's been 90 years for those. Mm-hmm. So we lost the trees around the back of the rose garden. So now we're almost full sun again. So we can grow more things than we could before.
Yeah.
But during the WPA period, rose gardens and pergolas were springing up all over the country. It was really, mm-hmm. it was really characteristic of that period. And the name Roosevelt means field of roses.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know if it was because of that, but rose gardens were a symbol of new life and beauty. And all these people during the Depression were so sad, and this brought joy.
Yeah.
To everyone to have flowers. It just is so joyful. Everybody can enjoy them.
Yeah.
And it was happening all over the United States. So the Rose Garden was just kind of a symbol of that period.
Yeah. Well, let's cross the street in the park and let's talk mm-hmm. about the River Wild area and some of the very interesting sculptures we see over there.
Yes, that's just I guess it's my favorite area, really, because it was built for children with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
That was the whole thing behind everything, was that it was a big sand lot.
Yeah.
If you were in a wheelchair, if you were on a walker, I mean, it was not good. And we didn't have a bathroom over there, and that little bathhouse is historic. And originally, we'd had a wading pool in the 30s. We had a wading pool.
Mm-hmm.
And so that splash pad was one of the first things that got built. It's built exactly on the shape of the wading pool, mm-hmm. but it's accessible to all children. And with Decatur Developmental right across the street, and at that time, Somerville Road and their children with disabilities would come over all the time and use it. But now, you know, the whole playground is accessible almost, well, I guess, 80 to 90% accessible.
Yeah.
Also, beyond that, the architect told us, you've got to tell a story. What is your story? So we started mm-hmm. thinking about the history of Decatur, the history of North Alabama, the history of this whole area.
Mm-hmm.
And I had not known it, but this area was the big hunting ground for the Native Americans. They preserved it. And they came from all over the United States just to hunt in this area because we had so many, nut-bearing trees, oaks and hickories and all those things that attract animals. So mm-hmm. all the tribes would come. So we got that story. And part of the story was that there back then animals could talk to each other. I mean, in their understanding. So that's the point of the animals. And then we wanted to have animals that the children would love and that they could touch.
Yeah.
It's a museum really, mm-hmm. but it's a museum where you touch the art.
Yeah.
So it really was fun because we had these two Alabama artists that one Frank Fleming, and he died in 2018. He was amazing. He didn't speak for the first 8 years of his life. He was,
wow.
People thought he was retarded, but he can only relate to animals. So his whole life, he did these gorgeous sculptures, and they're very mythic and mystical, and
mm-hmm.
a big frog, but look at its hands. It has
it's man hands.
Amazing. So the first sculpture we got was his big turtle, a very, very expensive thing. It was donated by a foundation, the Hudson Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
But that bronze turtle has held so many children, and they've rubbed its head so many times. And it's really fabulous. And then later we got the big bullfrog, and we got another bullfrog family. And then he made a beaver for us that my husband had trapped a beaver, and he copied that beaver. I mean, it's crazy. We have that in the Kiwanis little area there, the beaver climbing on the rock. And
yeah.
The architect wanted it to look kind of scary. I don't think it looks very scary.
Yes.
And the other artist was just this fabulous guy named Bruce Larson, and he lives in South Alabama, and he did the entry gateway.
Mm-hmm.
And the neat thing about that entry gateway, he did most of it on site, and it's all done by hand. It's a big tree with some herons in the top,
mm-hmm.
a heron's nest. And it is in honor of the lady, Margaret Palmer Vann, who started special education in Decatur, Alabama, and in Huntsville. This was back in the early 1970s and 1960s. There was no special education. Mm-hmm. And see, the people who gave the money for these things were all the teachers and the parents and the children's parents who had used the special education. A lot of them were special education teachers. Mm-hmm. So we raised the money for that all that sculpture because of that. It was really because of the children and the park being right across from three schools. And really, the districts are really what they call Title I districts, free and reduced lunch. And so it's children that don't get to go to Disney World that get to come to River Wild. Mm-hmm. And the stories about the Tennessee River and the plants and animals are things from the Tennessee River area. And that's one of the big things we want to teach there. And to be able not to have to go in a museum, not to have to pay to go anywhere, but to actually go and be near this art by Bruce Larson. And I forgot to mention the dragonfly.
Oh,
Bruce Larson also did the dragonfly, and people are fascinated by the dragonfly.
Mm-hmm. And the bunny.
Yeah. Well, they love the swamp rabbit. Oh, my goodness. But the swamp rabbit, oh, people love him. They sit on his ears. They do all. They're just about indestructible, being bronze. And recently, we become an arboretum, and each plant is, not each plant, but one of each kind. Each shrub, not plant, but just the woody things, just the trees and the shrubs are labeled. There'll be one label for each species. Mm-hmm. But it's just very, it's very interesting. And all you have to do is scan the QR code, and you get all these pictures of the trees. And there's even a person that pronounces the scientific name for you on there.
Wow.
So it's, you need to, if you haven't scanned it in a while, you need to scan it because that's all, it's being improved all the time. And all that was done by the Muscle Shoals National Heritage Area. They did this for us as far as developing the verbiage for the signage, the things that go on it, all the photographs, all those things for educational purposes. We couldn't be an arboretum if we didn't have that. So we have 90 trees and shrubs that are labeled so that you can go and you can learn about the plants.
Oh, wow.
By yourself, it can be a, you know, your own little tour, but it goes all through the walking trail, even up to Fourth Avenue. I have about five or six more I'm putting in that haven't been in yet. But it's quite exciting.
Yeah.
But in the fish school, I forgot to mention, it's so important because the Tennessee River, it has 43 of our native fish, and they're all in Corten steel. But the fish are named, the shapes are there. It's very special. I mean, it's very detailed, really.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know about it. It's almost like a hidden treasure. People love that bandstand, that stone bandstand they have all of my life. They've been attracted to that. It's real cool in the summer. And you can see all around. It's really a special place.
Yeah. It's like an outdoor classroom. So you can go and play on the playground and then learn something as you're playing. I could see it being really cool for homeschool moms too, to take their kids.
The homeschool moms come like in the morning. I see lots of them. And even on the playground, all the signage on the playground, the big pictures of animals, all those are native to the Tennessee River. Tennessee River is like the driving force of the whole thing. It's really, I don't know, it's sort of the heart of North Alabama. And we just want to celebrate it and teach people to appreciate it and love it, and also love our green space, because if we don't love it and we don't know about it, it will disappear.
Yeah.
We just want to protect it for as long as possible.
Yes, absolutely. I know you're talking about the swamp rabbit and kids climbing all over it. I have the most adorable picture of my niece when she was younger. She'd climbed up like she was in his arms.
I mean, they can't resist
it. Yeah.
They climb on everything. They climb up the sculpture of the trees and the herons at the entrance. They love all that. They even try to climb the trees. We discourage that because some of the trees are young and they can't be break easily. But the trees are fascinating. I mean, there are things there like a pawpaw grove
Yes.
So it's just really interesting to take your family there and just to go by yourself. I go by myself every day and look at all the different things. And right now is the most, it's going to be so exciting in the next month because all the new little leaves are coming out. And it's just so much fun to watch, and the flowers.
I know. I'm like you. I go every day. Well, 6 days a week I'm in that park, and even in the wintertime. And I've learned to enjoy the park in every season. Of course, I have my favorites, you know, like spring is always beautiful, and fall with the colors, summer. I mean, but even wintertime.
It's amazing. And the people you get to know, you get to know so many of those people. I mean, just they're almost like your friends.
You see the same people walking at the same time. And I have a lot of dog friends that I see.
Dogs are big.
It's such a wonderful place. Well, tell us, what are some of your favorite things about the park? Or what is your favorite thing about the park, if you could narrow it down?
Right now, I have to say the trees are my favorite thing. But also, I just love the fact that it's such a democratic space, that anybody can be there, and we're all there together, and we're all sharing it together. And during the pandemic, it really was a sanctuary.
Yes.
And it still is for me. It's really just a sanctuary for me. And, you know, every time a tree is planted, I'm so excited. And it takes a lot of work to grow a tree. I mean, you have to water the tree, you have to prune the tree, I mean, protect the tree. It's a lot of work, but it's going to be hopefully there for, like, the white oak trees for another 300 years. So we have to, you know, we have to do it for the future. And that's what I'm into right now.
I know. I love when I see more trees pop up and the red buds are blooming. And
Oh, the animals with the tree. I never realized. I had no idea that over 500 butterflies have to have the oak trees to exist. And about the different trees and the things they support. And the red bud's also a major one for pollination. And it's just fascinating because I never thought about native bees, but they have to have bare earth. So you can't put mulch everywhere, and you need to leave it a little messy. So River Wild, we're leaving it more messy than we used to. They were leaving a lot of the leaves there and all, because that's where the animals live. That's where those little insects live, and they just support all of our birds. If we don't have insects, we don't have birds. And we want more birds, and we want more butterflies, and we just want more bees. And these bees are not going to sting. I mean, they're not that going to be. The native bees make their homes sometimes just in the bare dirt. They dig down and make tunnels, or sometimes in the plants that are left over from the winter, the little stalks and everything. That's why we don't, we try not to cut everything totally back. We try to leave some stalks for them to make their nest in. So it's just a fascinating how much life is there, and how many how many birds are there. And this one young girl named Ava Lowerly, who photographs these birds, she is amazing. She's only like 14 years old. And she has, she's like, I don't know, an expert in birds. She's taught me so much about birds. And, you know, I don't even see half the birds. And and she's just opened my eyes to that. And I want more birds, and to have more birds, we've got to have more trees, and we've got to have more insects and all that. It all works together. But it's just a joy for people to see the birds.
Yeah, there's a little cardinal couple that I call them that's always waiting in that same spot when I am running around that curve around by River Wild, and they're always there every morning.
I have my mockingbirds. My mockingbirds I love, because they are all up and down right in there, and they are all talking. It's funny.
Yeah. Well, tell us how people can support the park. How can we get involved?
Well, the park is totally, well, I can't say totally. The city does a huge amount. But all the plants and all the maintenance, most of the maintenance as far as the gardens go and the trees, it's all done by philanthropy and people giving donations. We just take donations and we write notes, like for if someone dies or someone has a birthday or Merry Christmas, if you don't have anything else to do, mm-hmm. or a gift. It's just a great gift, because what you're doing is you're making possible more trees to be planted in the park, more flowers to bloom. Mm-hmm. Without those gifts, we can't do it. The city doesn't have in their budget enough money to do what we've been able to do, which is over $3 million worth of improvements over there, just by small donations from people over 24 years, mm-hmm. trusting that there's really no overhead except buying our stationery or something. Because there are no employees.
Yeah.
Everybody's a volunteer. So all the money goes to the park. Mm-hmm. So we do raise money that way. And we've just been lucky to get a lot of grants because of all the children, because of the location, because of the people it serves.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Well, before we go, tell us something that has been unexpected that you have learned or seen in being a part of Delano Park.
Well, the most unexpected thing for me has been the health benefits of the park. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. It really came out during the pandemic for me. Mm-hmm. And so I started studying it. And it turns out that all this is documented, how it lowers your blood pressure.
Yeah.
We always knew that trees gave you clean air and clean water. Mm-hmm. And all that. But I had no idea the effect of trees and plants and green space on people, on just their mood, on their actual health, mm-hmm. on their blood pressure. And I experienced it myself. And I got COVID during all that time, had to be hospitalized, really was in bad shape. Mm-hmm. And the park gave me the opportunity to heal. You know, it was a place I wasn't afraid to be around anybody. You weren't mm-hmm. afraid. It has made a huge difference in my life. It not only makes your brain better, I mean, it just makes you happy. Mm-hmm. And all these physical things, and people have been knowing this for many years about the value of being outside, but I just think sunshine and mm-hmm. trees and flowers can change a person's life. And that is, I never realized that when I started. It was all about the art and the history and all that. But now it's about people deserve to have that opportunity to be outside. And we need to get our children, our families outside as much as possible. Mm-hmm. It transforms a person's outlook.
Yeah, I'm like you. I've gone to Delano Park. I've lived near it for, is it almost 17 years? And so I've kind of gone back and forth walking a little bit, but it was during the pandemic for me too, that it became an everyday thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so peaceful and calming, and just to see the different things blooming, and, you know, it was kind of like, it's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. Like mm-hmm. these trees are still growing. These plants are still blooming, you know, the sun is still shining. And yeah, it helped a lot health wise. And I walked 623 miles that year. And the majority of them were in Delano Park.
I try to walk 10,000 steps every day. Somebody just told me, walk 10,000 steps.
Yeah.
So I try to do that, and I keep up with it. It's amazing how many steps you walk if you count every step.
Yeah.
But I do try to do that, and that really keeps me going. And I can mm-hmm. face just about any adversity when I'm doing that. It helps me deal with stress.
Yes.
It really just calms me a lot. And mm-hmm. and I just have to get outside. I have to do it. Even if you just walk, 1 mile or even just a little time, it can make all the difference. And even if you just go sit under a tree, you can make all the difference in your life. And so I think it's great. And I think it's amazing to have something that's free and open every mm-hmm. day of the year for you. So, I'm just a very big park advocate. All the parks in Decatur, I'm a very big advocate for them and for any place like that.
Absolutely. Well, it has been so awesome to talk with you. Would you like to tell our listeners where they can find you your website and social media?
Yes, you can go delanopark.org. If you want to talk to me, you can email from that website. Go straight to me.
Okay.
And there's a Facebook page also, and there's an Instagram site also, Delano Park Conservancy.
Okay.
So, yes, we'd love to have you come to the park and enjoy the new trees and enjoy the new signage and all the things that we have going on. It's educational, but mainly it's just great for your spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. It's fun.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, thank you again for being my guest. It's been wonderful having you.
Thank you, Malia.
And North Alabama's social platforms are linked in the description. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back next time with more about North Alabama adventures.